You're listening to the Full Contact Fighter Radio Network.
Hey guys, this is Dennis Kang. Hey,
this is Mr. Cripples, a.k.a. the Cat Smasher.
Hey, this is John the Natural Alessio.
Hey, this is Rashad Evans.
Hey guys, this is the Big Frog, Jeff Curran.
Hey, this is Mac Danzig.
Hey guys, this is Jason the Anthony McDonald.
Hi, this is Ivan Salvey.
Hey everybody, this is Jordan Elter, Jay Dirksen.
Hey, it's Mark Machine Hunting here.
Hey everybody, you are listening to the world's most handsome fighter on the planet. Yes, this is Al Guapo, and you are listening to Full Contact Fighter Radio with Kelsey Mowat.
Thank you for tuning in to yet another edition of Full Contact Fighter Radio. 2 days away from Pride's second American event coming up this Saturday, of course. I'm your host, Kelsey Mullen from Vancouver, British Columbia. Joining me, maybe not as always. I can't usually say as always anymore because you haven't been around as much lately, Brendan. Brendan Lear from Edmonton, Alberta.
I missed one show. Here's how it really happens, is that Kelsey calls me up and says, can you do this at this time? I say no, and then all of a sudden there's a show with a bunch of dudes I don't know. It's like, I think that's the message that
irreplaceable.
Even though you're in no way compensated for doing this, you're completely replaceable. So it's not even a mixed message. It's like a double slam.
I don't know, man. Your priorities are out of whack. You've been traveling, going to Saskatchewan, see the family and folks. Where's your priorities, buddy? Should be all about FCF radio.
I'm sorry.
Yeah. We've got an interesting...
If they had telephones in Saskatchewan, we could still do this, but...
Yeah, well, traveling there takes 30 hours driving time.
In the wintertime, they have to build an ice line, and then when it thaws in the spring and in the fall, the telephones go down for a period of time.
Permafrost, you get stuck in the mud.
It's all about the permafrost.
We've got a big show today. We've got Mike Brown coming on the program, recently defeated Eves Edwards in Bodog Fight Season 2. Everybody, well, lots of people got to see that fight, and it was a competitive fight, and it's a huge win for Mike Brown, so he'll be joining the program as well. And we've got Ryan Diaz coming on the show, Canadian junior bantamweight. Well, actually, he's the Canadian King of the Cage bantamweight champion, and he's going to be dropping down 135 pounds to take on Manny Tapia for the World Junior Bantamweight Championship, and that's going to be March 10th, so we're going to have Ryan on the show as well. Should be pretty interesting. Brendan, did you get a chance to see Mike Brown's fight with Eves Edwards?
I sure did.
Very nice, very nice. Well, we'll have to ask Mike all about it, so stay tuned. You're listening to Full Contact Fighter Radio.
They fight for different things. For some, it's for fame. For others, it's a job. Some fighters just like to hurt people. Visit BodogFight.com and see who the fighters are and why winning matters to them. They'll have a chance to win, but only if that next round matters more than anything. View highlights, read fighter bios, watch TV episodes, or see when the next live event is. Don't miss any mixed martial arts action. BodogFight.com. Make it matter.
Mixed martial arts history will be made as the International Fight League's 2007 inaugural season explodes Friday, February 23rd at the arena at Gwinnett Center. See Carlos Newton's Dragons battle Matt Lindland's Wolfpack. And Igor Zinoviev's Red Bears face off against Henzo Gracie's Pitbull. Be there Friday, February 23rd, 7:30 p.m. at the arena at Gwinnett Center. For tickets, call Ticketmaster at 404-249-6400 or log on to Ticketmaster.com.
Joining Full Contact Fighter Radio is Mr. Mike Brown from, well, I'm guessing that you're down in sunny Florida once more, Mike. How are you doing tonight?
I'm good. I'm down in Coconut Creek, Florida right now.
Right. Of course, Mike Brown, a big win over Eves Edwards. You've obviously known this for quite some time and in Bodog Fight Insiders, but fans got to watch the fight last week. Congratulations on that, Mike. Where does that rank in your career, getting a win over a guy like Eves Edwards? At one point, people are saying Eves Edwards is the uncrowned lightweight champion of the UFC.
No, it was a huge win for me. At one point, he was really on top of the weight class. Lately, he's had a few losses that, you know, some people have written him off a little bit, but he's still Eves Edwards, man. He's still tough, and on any given day can beat anybody in the world, you know?
Mike, did you ever at any time, you know, Eves is probably one of the bigger names that they brought into the Bodog show. Did you feel at any time that you were ever brought in to lose to Eves?
I thought I might have, because they told me, you know, well, if you lose at 155 to Eves, you know, we'll bring you back at 145. So I kind of took that as, all right, yeah, I'm kind of coming in as a big underdog, and if it doesn't go well, they have another option for me, you know.
And how many of your fights have you actually fought? What's the breakdown of your fights between 145 and 155?
Almost all of them were at 145, except I had a few in Massachusetts at 55, but Massachusetts was the same day weigh-in, so it's kind of a
right.
Weird situation there. You know, you can't cut much weight when you're fighting an hour.
Just looking back over your record, you must feel more than vindicated with your losses as they read of a sort of who's who of the 155 division, including some of your wins. So Genki Sudo, Joel Lausen, Imanari, you must feel good when you know seeing the success of those for Hermes Franca. You must feel great seeing the success of those fighters.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't lost anybody bad. Like Hermes hurt me a lot. I remember that hurt my feelings because it was his first fight and I didn't know how good he was. So you know, I was like, oh damn, you know, that was a tough loss. But then I saw he rattled off like 7 or 8, 9 wins in a row or something after me, and I was like, ah, no shame in it, I guess.
Yeah. What was the game plan going in against Eves, Mike? You come from a well-established wrestling background, jiu-jitsu background, but one thing that was really evident in the fight with Eves is that you've worked on your stand-up. Looked great.
Yeah, I mean, my boxing I've worked on the last few years a real lot. My boxing got, you know, much, 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 much better, but with Eves, my game plan was still to take him down because he's not, you know, he's a better striker than he is a grappler.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, the game plan was to take him down and try to submit him. That was my game plan. But he was hard to take down, and he was hard to hold down. You know, I for the first 3 or 4 minutes, it's all I tried to do was take him down, and I realized it was going to be hard, and then stop trying to burn all your energy, take him down. I might as well just start boxing with him and see how it goes.
It looked to me like the ring is not... The ring has its advantages, but it seems to have its disadvantages when you're trying to ram someone against the side and take them down. And you certainly saw that evident in the Calder Gill fight because it seems the fighter you're trying to take down really can't do anything but lean up against the ropes, which is supposedly illegal. Does that make it awkward for you?
Yeah. I mean, I like the cage better. I think it's easier to take people down off the cage. That's for sure. But the ring, it's easier to cut them off and get them and corner them. You know, where octagon or something like that's a little easier for them to circle out. But I prefer the cage, honestly.
And I know you can't get into any specifics about the Bodog fight season, especially the episodes that haven't aired, but give us a little bit of background to what was it like, Mike, heading over to a very historic, famous city of St. Petersburg. What was that experience like being over in Russia?
It was fun. It was a cool trip. You know, you're doing a lot of production stuff, a lot of... you know, TV stuff for like 10 or 11 days, you know, so that was kind of a new thing that I'd never seen before. But, you know, it bothered some guys, we should be training, we should be sleeping, or whatever it was. It didn't really bother me that much because I figured he's had to do it too, so we're both in the same boat, you know.
Yeah.
But Russia was cool. Russia was, you know, it was cold and gloomy, but it was cool to see the city.
Now, how does this break down next for you then? You'll fight, is it Rodrigo Dam at the pay-per-view?
Yeah, Rodrigo Dam.
Okay. So what was your assessment of him and his fight against Calder Gill, which of course aired the same episode as yours? What were your thoughts on Rodrigo and what are you looking to do against this guy in April?
Well, he's a, you know, good wrestler and good jiu-jitsu. I know, you know, I trained with a lot of guys from Rio here and a lot of other Brazilians from all over. And a lot of them have trained with Rodrigo, so I kind of got a good scouting report of him. And a good wrestler, good jiu-jitsu, you know, not very good stand-up. That's what I get from everybody. So the plan is, you know, take him out of his game and try to stand up with him.
That was my comment. He seemed to be a bit, a little bit one-dimensional. And do you think you're going to be able to show a different side of your game fighting him?
Yeah, I mean, usually with grapplers, my game plan is to stand up. But somehow, you know, when a takedown's there, I happen to somehow make it, you know. If an easy takedown's there, I just kind of happen to do it. But with a guy like this, you know, he's much better on the ground than he is on his feet, so, you know, hopefully I'll show what I have on my feet.
Tell us a little bit about your background, Mike, for some people who aren't familiar with your career. Have you been at ATT the whole time, and if not, when did you transition there?
No, I started out, you know, training in some small places in Maine. And then started training a lot at Team Elite down in Massachusetts. with Keith Raquel, Jorge Rivera, Matt Lee, those guys, Nuri Shakir. And, you know, I was there for several years. And then guy Jay Jack moved to Maine. He helped me out a lot. I trained with him. I trained with Marcus Davis for a while. And then 2 years ago, I made the move. I came and visited down here at ATT just to check out one of these big monster academies, you know, and I was, fell in love with it, you know, right away. And made my move, came down here, and training's so good. We have such great coaches, great training partners, great facility. You just can't beat it.
Yeah, well, we've had, I think, at least four American Top Team fighters on the show, and they all speak volumes and continue to give a lot of credit to the ATT for turning around their career or bettering their career. You've won four fights in a row now. So,
we'll say that again?
Oh, I was just saying you've won four fights in a row now. Do you attribute a lot of your success as of late to ATT?
Oh, yeah, of course. You know, my training partners are phenomenal. There's so many great lightweights at American Top Team. You know, it's amazing. You know, I'm getting quality, high-level sparring every day, you know?
Yeah.
How exactly is American Top Team breaking down now? They have the core center in Coconut Creek. And then has McCarthy started up his own academy somewhere? And Danny has his own academy as well, too, right?
Yeah. A lot of pro fighters open up, you know, little satellite schools around to, you know, make some money, supplement their income. But the headquarters is Coconut Creek, and even when they got their own school, they come to the major one at Coconut Creek for, to improve their own skills. That's where, you know, all the pros come to train.
Now, I wanted to ask you a little bit more about 145 versus 155, and it kind of sounds like you'd prefer to fight at 145. That kind of seems like it's a reoccurring theme on our show as of late. We've had a lot of different, there's been some high-profile fights at 145 recently. Mark Hominick had some Hioki up in Canada. Uriah Faber is drawing some attention to the division, so we've had a few fighters on at that weight. Mike, what are your thoughts? Do you think we're going to start seeing bigger shows include fights at 145, or are you also capable of fighting at 155 if they don't?
I think I can fight at 55 if they don't, but I think I'm a better 145 pounder.
Yeah.
You know, I'd rather fight at 45, but I know Bulldog is going to have 145. Mm-hmm. I don't know what the plan is with UFC. I heard they are, and then I heard it's just going to be WEC. And, you know, I don't know if people don't market it, there's never going to be any money at 145, so that kind of sucks for the little guys, you know?
Yeah.
And I think it's, man, great weight classes. Like, look at that. Look at Frankie Edgar and the Griffin fight, man. Amazing fight. Everyone loved it, you know, and I think 45 is equally or even better than 55. You watch Arturo Gatti and these guys, you know, in boxing, it's all the best fights, you know.
Well,
that was one of my comments. Do you think that the success of 55, especially across the board, and now, of course, the new UFC reality show is going to be exclusively 55, you look on the last three or four pay-per-views and the free shows as well, the 55 fights have been the best. Do you think that momentum will carry over to 45?
I think it will. I'm sure it will. I just hope it doesn't take 3 or 4 years for it to happen. You know, I hope it happens within the next 6 months. That way, you know, it'll just be too bad if it takes another 4 or 5 years for that to happen, you know.
What's it been like for you as far as a Bodog fight experience in getting exposure for your career, Mike? I mean, you competed in the UFC and you had some success overseas, and now back in North America, you've got the Bodog fight, which, I get, you know, is internationally available, I suppose. Have you noticed any change yet, or are the calls starting to come in a little bit now that you've got the win over Eze Edwards?
I just got, you know, it was on TV. I haven't had many TV fights in the U.S. My only other TV fight here in the United States was Genki in the UFC, and I lost that. So it's nice to have a win on TV, you know? I get, like, at the gym, you know, some of the regular students and stuff like that. Well, hey, I saw you on TV. It's kind of cool to have that happen, which doesn't usually happen for me, you know?
Now, we've asked a few people already. Now that Genki's retired, you're not going to be able to get your revenge on him, but can you maybe inherit his dance squad and work up some...
Man, I would love to.
Bust a sweet move?
That guy's my favorite fighter. I love watching him, man. I love all of his entrances, and I love, man, every fight he's in is fun to watch. Everybody's gonna love that. I wish I wasn't so nervous and can pull that off in my fights. I'm too nervous.
tell us a little bit more about because people don't seem to be catching up on the whole idea of the Bodog fight. So what is the promotion? How has been explained to you? Is this a company you're going to sign on for a long term? Or are they going to keep on doing these sort of one-off promotions? Or are they going to establish some kind of regular, more traditional promotion? What sense do you make of that?
Well, I mean, they're going to run their pay-per-view shows, and they have their weekly TV shows to kind of build the fighters to make the pay-per-view show, you know, more interesting to the fans. You know, so you watch the weekly show and get all excited for the pay-per-view. That's the idea, you know. Like, all the winners who fought in this season will fight on the pay-per-view, plus will be a headliner. Like Fedor and Lin-Lin, man, what an incredible headliner. You know, you got Fedor, the best fighter in the world on the card. You can't argue with that.
And did you actually get to meet this Bodog, the whole consortium sort of run by, do you ever see him? Is he, like, walking around in golden pajamas, like,
Who's that?
Enter the Dragon, the Calvin guy?
Yeah, he had the show, he was real friendly with all the fighters, you know, got right in there, hung out, you know, threw a big after-fight party, he was right there at the party, you know, talking with everybody, mingling with people. He was real cool, real chill, real down-to-earth.
Does he have, like, a harem of women in negligee following him around?
No, but I think he has, like KGB security, like, with him at all times. That's for sure.
Did you go down and check out any of the filming? I guess they were just filming season 3 in Costa Rica. Did you go down for any of that? Or
no, I didn't get to go. I stayed back here, but we had, like, a bunch of ATT guys go down there. And so there was a whole crew of ATT guys. I had to stay back and work a bit, make some money.
How's it gonna work with you now at ATT? And this is becoming an interesting issue. I guess it's a problem that everyone would love to have, but it's an interesting problem in that there are fewer and fewer promotions, and you've got a lot of fighters competing out of the same schools now, and Jackson is one, Miletic is another, and ATT is obviously a third. How do you guys work out the politics of who's going to fight in what promotion, and is there a sort of pecking order? Do you have to battle one another in training, or how does that all work out?
I don't know, really. It just kind of happens, you know. They just kind of look for fights for you, and, I mean, we have a lot of guys in the same weight classes, the same promotions, I think. I never thought about how it works. I just know guys kind of, whenever they're looking fights, what happens is now, actually, is a lot of the promotions come to us. You know, we don't always bring guys to the table. They say, hey, well, you know, we need a 170-pounder, you know, what do you got, you know? And whoever's healthy and whoever doesn't have anything already scheduled, we'll get the call. But, you know, that's how it works as far as I know.
Coming from a wrestling background, it seems like the wrestlers have fewer problems with the idea of fighting their stablemates or fighting guys they train closely with. What's your personal opinion about that?
I mean, I wouldn't want to fight anybody who I'm training with at this time, you know, but before I came to ATT, I had fought two guys that were on ATT, you know, Renato Tavares I fought, and I fought Hermes Franca, who used to be with ATT, and, you know, and to me, it's just like wrestling, yeah, it's just a match. I go out there and compete, and good luck, and, you know, to me, it's nothing more than that, but a sport.
Have you had a chance to check out Luigi Fioravanti as he's training and prepares for his upcoming fight with John Fitch?
Yeah, well, man, Luigi's looking tough. He's scrappy, he hits hard, and he's also one of those guys that competes well. You know, he always comes to fight, and he's looking good in the gym, he's looking lean, you know, leanest I've ever seen him. Mm-hmm.
So what's going on what happened there with Thiago? Was that just a terrible confusion, or, you know, how is that all playing out?
I think he took some sort of diuretic or something like that you know, he wasn't aware of or didn't aware of that it was illegal, and then something happened, he tested positive for this stuff, and then he got a 8-month suspension. A long time, it's gonna, you know, that hurts him. He just come off a great win, then he looked so good in that last fight against D'Souza. You know, he just showed how, I mean, his takedown defense has gotten so good, and his stand-up is awesome. So, man, he's going to give people a lot of problems. It's just kind of unfortunate that he has to take an 8-month layoff now.
Do you think that was, do you think that punishment was disproportionate, seeing as people who have tested positive for steroids actually get, have received lesser punishments?
Oh man, I wasn't even aware that people got lesser punishments for actually using steroids. Yeah, then I would think that it would be a little lesser. I thought he was going to get that because I noticed they said something, you know, I think I read it somewhere where it said, you know, Ricardo Mayorga tested for the same thing and some other guy did and they got 8 months suspension from Nevada. So I assumed, like, yeah, he's going to get 8 months. That's a long time, you know. Especially when, you know, he's in everybody's head right now. Everybody remembers, he looked great, he looked great.
That was a great fight. That must be an incredible disappointment to him.
Yeah, he's pretty bummed out. You know, he wants to fight, and he's on top of his game right now.
And with Pride having an American event, of course, this weekend, Dennis Kang, has he been around in the gym? Is he continuing to heal up from his arm?
Yeah, Kang is here. Kang's a monster. Yeah. He tore his bicep there in the tournament against Masaki, and he was out for a little bit, but he's back now training, and I believe he's fighting in Spirit MC coming right up in April.
Oh, okay.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, he's fighting outside of Pride.
Yeah, they're allowing him to do it. You know, they don't have a problem with it. So he's going to fight Spirit MC, I think. And
is that going to be kind of a tune-up fight?
Yeah, I don't know if it's a tune-up or what, but I just know that.
I guess the question is who's the poor sucker who has to fight him?
Yeah, I think it's some Korean guy, so they're in trouble. I never heard of the guy's name. I don't even know if Kang told me his name. But he actually took off yesterday he's going to the Pride show in the U.S.
Oh, okay.
So he's going to be doing it. He's all over the place.
My last question for you is in regards to Masakusa Imanari, and he's kind of, some people, I think, avid fans over here in the States and in North America are familiar with him, and he's going to be fighting in the U.K. and has done so there, so some fans are familiar with him, but tell us a little, for those people who aren't, tell us a little bit about him. You fought him and lost by a leg lock submission, I believe. He is good, as everybody says. Mike, in regards to the leg locks, this guy's supposed to be crazy.
Man,
just nuts at him.
As far as leg locks go, man, he is the master.
Yeah.
You know, he's got a lot of good guys with it, you know, and you know what's coming, but he finds a way to get you. But like he got me, man. He tore my ACL. I was out for, you know, 6-7 months. You know, I had to have reconstructive surgery on it. And you know, he's done to other guys too. But the problem is, that's kind of his thing. You know, if he doesn't get you in that, especially out of Japan, he's gonna lose the decision every time. Because he just flops guard. Every time you get near him, he'll fall to his back and roll after you, and it just looks really bad. You know.
Now, was that your own stubbornness that you got caught in that you actually received an injury, or was it the kind of lock that goes on and just pops you automatically?
No, it was I don't even know how to explain it. He was going for maybe a toe hold, or I don't know if he meant to do it, but the way the way I popped it, I'd never seen this leg lock before in my life. So I don't know if he even meant to. I don't know if I kind of turned out of it the wrong way. Like, you know, I felt no pain at all, and then all of a sudden, bow, you know, it just, everything tore, you know, and then I'm like, oh, you know, I'm still caught in some sort of leg lock, so I'm tapping, you know, and then, but I don't know, if you watch it, you know, it's on YouTube, I see everybody checking it out on YouTube, you know, check out this crazy leg lock, you know, because he did it from the feet, we're standing up, he jumped up and kicked at me, and then dove after my feet, you know, and then somehow got this, tied up my leg, and as I tried to turn out of it, it tore my ACL.
Hmm. Yeah, let's check that out.
But yeah, he's good. I just saw he did like a flying armbar to Robbie Oliver over in Cage Race last weekend.
Yeah.
Crazy guy.
Brendan, do you have anything else for Mike?
That's it. Congratulations, Mike, and I'm glad you finally got some recognition after your big win, and hopefully get more people get to see you on TV right away.
All right, yeah, thanks a lot, guys. I appreciate it.
Mike Brown, thank you very much, and we'll talk to you again.
All right, cool.
A person who gets punched in the face for a living doesn't know what fear is. Pain doesn't exist if you train more than 30 hours a week. Someone who fights with broken bones has a totally different definition of agony. Bodog Fight mixed martial artists know that fear, pain, and agony won't last. But the glory of having your hand raised at the end of the fight, That lasts forever. Bodog Fight, St. Petersburg. Don't miss any mixed martial arts action. Check your local listings or visit BodogFight.com for details.
The best stuff for MMA clothing is definitely the Full Contact Fighter shop, because with FCF gear, you don't have to be a champion to dress like one. Go check it out by now. I know you've seen it, that classic FCF logo on so many great items like our classic t-shirts, tricot jackets. We've got new high-quality rash guards, plus the NXP Extreme Fight shorts, which are available in red, black, navy, or camo. Of course, don't forget about our fantastic FCF hoodies, a variety of NHB corduroy and distress wash hats, plus now open is the FCF sticker and banner shop. We've got a wide assortment of International Fight League merch, all your favorite teams there. Just head to www.fcfighter.com or call 516-676-0033. That number again is 516-676-0033.
Hey, this is John the Natural Alessio. You're listening to Full Contact Fighter Radio with Kelsey Mowat.
Joining Full Contact Fighter Radio now is the Lion. Mr. Ryan Diaz is going to be taking on King of the Cage flyweight world champion Manny Tapia March 10th. Ryan, how are you doing this afternoon?
I'm doing awesome.
I can't complain. Thanks. Obviously, you're taking on Manny Tapia, as I just said. It's a fight at 135 pounds. You usually compete at 145. Any you forecast any troubles getting down to 135 at all, Ryan?
It's been a long time since I've gone down to 135, so I don't forecast any trouble. Obviously, it's just a pain to get there, but. When the fight time comes, I will make the weight. I'm not worried about it. But yeah, there's always trouble when you're cutting weight, The number one thing is why I think it's the biggest trouble is because everybody likes to eat. Me, I love to eat, right?
Yeah, I'll join you on that one. Well, with Manny, what do you know about Manny, Ryan? Have you had a chance to see any of his fights? He's undefeated. He is the King of the Cage champ. What do you know about Manny, and what do you expect from Manny on the 10th?
I know Manny's, obviously, any guy who's the King of the Cage champ is always a tough guy. In fact, I actually got a chance to watch a couple of his fights. I know he's a pretty good boxer. I know he trains with a pretty good team, Millennia Jiu-Jitsu there. All I know is this fight's going to be a good fight, and this is going to be, I know one other thing too, is I'm going to be the toughest opponent he's ever had. I've looked at his record too, and I've looked at the opponent that he's fought against, and he's never fought an opponent of my caliber.
Yeah. Well, I don't know if you saw the article, but there was a story in Full Contact Fighter on Manny last month's issue, and he even said that he expected you to be his toughest test to date. When you look at your record, Ryan, some people might not realize, unless they look at it with in depth, that you have fought some of the better fighters out there.
Well, if people look at my record, they'll see that I fought all around the world, and I fought the toughest guys. I even fought, I fought the toughest guys at the beginning of my career, so it's almost like I did a backwards kind of deal with my career. Like, I went, fought all the top guys right at the beginning when I was still learning. And now it's like I went back a bit, and then I started fighting guys that I should have fought, and now it's back right up again at the top level again. So if people look at my record, they'll know that I have competed, and I paid my dues. I paid my dues to get where I'm at.
Yeah. Well, and most recently, you went up in weight to 155, and you fought Nam Phan, a King of the Cage rapid fire. And a lot of people, I didn't get a chance to see that fight, but a lot of people said that it was a great, entertaining bout. Nam Phan's got a great record as well. He's well known, competed in Strikeforce, etc. What was that like for you, and why do you do that, Ryan? I mean, you're pretty small. I think you're 5'5 or 5'6. You usually fight at 145, and that's not the only other time that you've gone up to 155.
Oh, I've gone up so many times. When I fought Hermes, I fought him at 160. When I fought Colo, I fought him at 165, and I don't walk that big at all. I'm a natural. I walk at about 148, 150. And for me, I just like to fight, and I love to put on the show. Like they said about my Nam Phan fight, yeah, it was an awesome experience. I'll tell you a story about that. That was the reason I fought Nam Phan, is because I didn't want to just pull out of the fight. I was supposed to fight, if you know what details about that, I was supposed to fight Elijah Faber on that one.
Right, right.
And then he pulled out because he got a tooth injury or something like that. So then I just, Terry asked me, he goes, you want to take another fight against Nam Phan? And I didn't know, I had no clue who Nam was. And it was like, no, actually, let me step back on that one. I was actually supposed to fight Crazy Horse first.
Oh, right.
They set me up with Crazy Horse, and I was going to take that fight. And the only reason, and then Terry bought tickets for Crazy Horse for the fight, and then all of a sudden, the day before, the day before the fight, he got put in jail. So then Nam was a last second replacement, and then I was like, you know what, they're telling me that he hasn't fought in a long time, and you know what, honestly, I didn't know that he was training for a fight. Like, he was training for a fight, and he was ready to fight.
Right.
And he's a natural 155, right? I was supposed to fight at 145. But back to it again, all these big fights, you know what, I just like to fight. I love to fight, and I love to put on the show. And every time I do fight, I always promise it's an entertaining fight, and it always is. Always.
Now, you mentioned the fight with Colacoca, and that's, I've talked to you before about it. We did a story on you last year at Full Contact Fighter, but for some of those people who missed that, tell us a little bit about that story. I mean, you took that fight against Colacoca, you mentioned he was like 165, and that, you took that fight on only a couple of days' notice, didn't you? And he ended up beating
Colacoca. I took that fight on three days' notice. I was supposed to go and corner one of our guys. He pulled out because he had to get emergency ear surgery. And just the person I am and the team we are, we're not going to leave. Like, I'm not going to leave TJ. I was in Super Bowl, so I'm not going to leave TJ hanging, right? And I told DJ, I called DJ up. I go, well, we called TJ up, and I'm like, hey, you know, our guy can't fight, but you know what? Hey, why don't I take the fight? I remember Lance was talking to TJ, and TJ started laughing. He thought it was a joke. He thought, you know, nah, don't worry about it. I'm like, dude, I'll do it for you, you know? Just don't forget how this is how we are. This is how we do our business, and this is how we run our team. And then he thought it was a joke at first, and then he actually realized I wasn't lying. So we went down there. It was actually a pretty funny story, because then we went down there, and then the day of the fight, right before before I go into the ring, the doctor tells me I have some asthma problem or something that day. I don't know what he said, and he didn't okay me for the fight. And then TJ, we talked to TJ, and then this whole mess, and we cleared it up, and we got into the ring, and I remember, I'll never forget looking at Colo. I was like, no, I never saw Colo before. And he's one of those guys that you stare at, and you're like, holy shit. I'm just like, holy cow. I'm like, holy cow. I'm like, oh, he's got tats everywhere. He's got tats on his chest, tats on his head, you know. And I remember him hitting me. I was like, oh, this is going to be a long one. But, you know, I know my technique's good, and I trust my training and everything. You know what? And it came out. Came on top of that. I remember armbarred him in the second round.
Right. And that came on the tail end of a winning streak that spanned a couple of years, Ryan, in your career. You won something like 6 fights in a row. What was that like for you at that time? Do you think it was just a matter of getting matched up against fighters more so your size or guys that you mentioned you fought against a lot of the top flight guys? What do you attribute that winning streak to?
It's actually more mental. You know what? I always worried about winning too much. You know, that was a problem a lot. Like, you know, you worry too much about winning, you worry too much about losing. It's not about winning or losing, it's just going out there and doing your best, having faith in your training, having faith in your team, having faith in your trainers, and you know what? That's when I started knowing, you know what? I'm just gonna go out there and just do what I do in the gym every day, and I've been training every day. That's when it started. And then I went to that long winning streak. I won a bunch of fights, and all in nice, in good fashion too. I won a few, like right off, like in a minute, and by knockouts, by submission. Mm-hmm. Like you said too, I started, you know what, I went backwards kind of in my career. When I first started fighting, I started fighting against top guys. When I should have been fighting against, you know, I should have been fighting some guys that were like just around the same level as me. So then it was perfect that I went up there and I saw what the competition was like, came back down a little bit, fought a few of the better guys, you know, a few of the guys that were just coming up as well, and then, you know, it worked out for me there.
Yeah. Well, what's your status right now with King of the Cage Canada? You beat Thierry Quenneville for the bantamweight 145-pound title in King of the Cage Canada.
I pretty much signed a deal with King of the Cage, so that includes both Canada and America.
Okay.
I think I signed I can't remember the details, but I signed a 5-fight deal with them. But there's I have to fight for them 5 times this year, I believe. So that includes both Canada and the United States.
Right.
I am still the current Canadian King of the Cage champion.
So I know you don't want to look past this fight with Manny, because you could be the world flyweight champion after this fight. But what's any plans ahead to defend your bantamweight title?
You know what? I just like to step forward, right? Whatever gets me ahead and ahead and ahead. Obviously, my biggest goal is to get into the biggest shows. The King of the Cage is a big show, yes. I would love to get into any other pay-per-view events or any other big shows too as well, right? Mm-hmm. if Canada Cage Canada offers a good offer and it's a good exposure, of course I'm going to defend my title. I can't predict the future. I don't know. I can't tell you who I'm going to fight next. I don't.
Yeah. Well, maybe let's get back to Manny a little bit, just a little bit more specifically. What do you expect? Do you think he's going to try to take you to the mat, or do you think he's going to try to stand with you for a bit and see where he's at?
So hard to say. You know, he might try to stand up with me, box with me, or he might try to take me down. You know, either way for me, it doesn't matter for me. I know I can. I'm confident on my feet, and I've proven myself on the ground. So wherever he wants to bring the fight, I'm ready for it.
And tell us a little bit about your training camp for some people that aren't familiar with your career. You train out of Gibson's Pancration, Lance Gibson, of course. Some people would remember him from some of the earlier UFCs. And you were also doing some training recently in Thailand as well.
Thailand was more just, you know, when you go to Thailand, I'll be honest with you. Everybody always talks this myth about Thailand. I love Thailand. Thailand's a beautiful place. But when you go to Thailand training, it's a funny thing because pretty much if you want to ask anything how the training is in Thailand, it's pretty much kick Thai fats. Totally, it's kick Thai fats. God, I've never thrown so many kicks in my life. I like to go to Thailand. I think of it more as a vacation spot, right?
Yeah.
You know, it's good. They teach you some little tricks in here and there, but I, as an MMA fighter, there's a lot of things you can't do that they try to teach you, because that's Thai boxing. Thai boxing is different from MMA. It's great for a workout. It's great to get your stand-up good. But you know what? For true MMA, that's why I love my camp. I love Gibson. I love Team Gibson, because you know what? Lance is an awesome trainer. Because first off, he's open. A lot of people think, you know, I remember, like you said, he's back from old UFC, like the older UFC. But you know what? He's not an old-school teacher. He's not an old-school fighter. Every day he trains, he comes up with new techniques, you know, he keeps up to date with all the fights, he checks all the new techniques, so it's not old school. And the thing is that our gym too is we have a lot of tough guys too. We have, and it's a lot of open, it's not like a very, what's the word I'm looking for? Like I said, it's not old school where you're strict, just stuck to one way and you have to do it that way.
Yeah.
At our gym, you know, it's open. It's open-minded, meaning like, you know, we're always evolving and we understand that. And we do train very hard, very hard.
You know, Lance is, how old is Lance now? He must be 36, 37?
Not that old.
Not even that old?
33, 34.
Oh, okay. So, I know there has been some talk, and I guess you can't speak for Lance, but you are an instructor at Gibson's, and you obviously train with him a lot. Is there any chance that we'll see Lance Gibson competing again?
You never know. I can't. You know, he'd love to fight one more time. He always mentions it. Just gotta be the right offer, you know what I mean? If they throw a good offer at him, you know, actually, which is a funny thing, you know what he would have been very perfect for him, and we did talk about, would have been awesome for him, was the Ultimate Fighter comeback.
Yeah.
You know, he never heard about that till after it was done, but you know what, that would have been an awesome thing for him to do.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember him mentioning that before, that he wanted to really get on there.
Did you get a chance to see Mark Hominick's TKO 28 fight against Hatsu Hioki?
The second one?
This recent one, the most recent one.
The one that passed on this weekend, no, but I heard a lot of stories and I read up on it a bit. Have you seen it?
Yeah, I caught the pay-per-view. It was a tight fight. It was very competitive. I personally, I think, I can't remember one of the commentators, and I don't remember if it was Mauro Ranallo or Mark Colangelo, but one of them, might have been Colangelo, scored a 3-2 for Hioki as far as rounds go, and I probably would agree with that assessment. We had Mark on the show last week, and he obviously was quite displeased with the decision. But I gotta say, man, and coming from, I want to ask you, because you're shorter, Hatsu Hioki, when you look at the size difference between him and Mark, it's unbelievable. And I recall your fights with Mark. And Mark towered over you, and Hioki towered over Hominick. You know, you're starting to see more and more of this now. You see guys fighting, really, really tall fighters fighting at really small, you know, smaller weights, whereas a few years ago you didn't see that so much. What's that like for you, Ryan? Do you think that's partially due to better training, guys just trying to maximize their reach, et cetera? What are your thoughts on fighters like that, and what does it mean for you?
Well, you know what? It's to be honest, it sucks. It's very hard to fight. If you were to define a perfect body for a fighter, it's a tall, lanky guy.
Yeah.
Because they just have long limbs for striking. Obviously, if you get them down the ground, you know what, you'd think maybe, yeah, they got longer limbs, so you submit easier. But even that's not true, too. It's still hard. You know, to fight a longer, lankier guy, for a guy like Kiyoki, it's perfect for him. It's for him to come down in weight like he is, be 6 foot something and fight at 145. And he's good.
Yeah.
And you know what? You're trying to say, how do you beat that? Well, it is back to training. Like, when I fought Hominick, it was very hard to get inside on him. You know, he played his game perfect. He kept away from me, and he kept that distance. He wouldn't let me get him down. You know what? If you ever get to watch that fight, it got to a point where I'm just like, forget this. I'm just going to jump my back. I'm going to go for a submission. And it was very close. Like, I remember having a tight, tight heel hook and then a tight, tight, figure four on it too. You know, but back to it again, like, fighting a taller opponent, yeah, it is very beneficial for somebody to be tall and lanky and fight at a lighter weight. Like, look at, who else is another good example of a tall, lanky? Like, even guys like Anderson Silva. Anderson Silva's a lanky kind of character. He's got long reach. Mm-hmm. That's why he's such good stand-up. Who else would be a good example?
Well, even Coulter Gill, who you used to train with.
Yeah, Coulter Gill, yeah.
Yeah, Bodog fight, watching his fight last week. I mean, he lost to Rodrigo Dam, but, yeah, really tall, lanky striker.
Yeah, it's very difficult. And the thing about Yoki, too, is he's actually good ground. He's actually a ground fighter.
Well, yeah, yeah. Well, I think that's probably why so many people were somewhat surprised at his progression as a stand-up fighter, because the first fight against Hominick, he won it on the ground, obviously, but I think a lot of people figured that Yoki would try to take that fight to the ground again, and he did try a couple times, and Mark, to his credit, did a great job of sprawling, and a couple times even caught some leg kicks and sweeped Yoki. But one thing I wanted to ask you about Gibson, you guys have had various competitors fight throughout the Canadian mixed martial arts scene. Is there any guys up and coming in the camp right now that we can look forward to watching, Ryan?
Oh, yeah. We actually got a fighter fighting this weekend up in Anacortes, which is just past the border here, past Bellingham. Josh Fletcher, one of the good guys. Obviously, too, we have Julia. Like, a lot of people, you're going to be surprised about this, because, you know what? A lot of people talk about, obviously, Gina Carino, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, Gina, who just fought on the show.
Yeah, Gina Carino, Gina
Carino, sorry. People don't understand that Julia actually fought Gina in a kickboxing match and beat her. And the thing is that now Gina's going into MMA, but people don't understand to wait till Julia comes out in her MMA fights, you know? And then, you know, it would be perfect. We'd be seeing her fight Gina eventually one day.
So Julia, what's her last name again?
Julia Budd.
Okay.
Who else can we think of here? There's obviously a lot of guys that are just coming up having their first time fights, right?
Yeah.
You know, but there's always people to watch out for in gym, especially nowadays too. Everybody wants to be a fighter, right? So there's a lot of people coming in that want to become fighters.
I always ask fighters this question when we have them on the show, especially guys that have been around a long time like you have, and you're not even 30 yet, and I always like to hear some of the fighters' perspectives, because there's a lot of guys now, and you know this full well, that probably only started competing professionally 2-3 years ago, and you had your first professional fight in 1999. Did you ever think it was going to get to this point, mixed martial arts? I mean, just look at the growth of your gym. I know you guys have had to move the gym and remodel it, and you've got more students than ever. What are your thoughts on this sports evolution?
You know what's the funniest thing is, because actually me and Lance were talking about it the other day, because I remember when we were fighting back then everybody, we'd tell people what we would do, and people would be like, okay, well, what's that? What are the rules? Da 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 da. Like, who are these people? What's the UFC? This and that, right? And it's just so, it's amazing how the whole game has changed so much, and now how mainstream the UFC has gotten. Like, you walk down the street, you see people with UFC shirts and Tapo shirts and all kinds of kickboxing gear or some martial art, school place.
Yeah.
To me, I love it, because obviously it puts our sport out there and makes it a lot more famous and a lot more popular, so people start to understand what we do. Obviously with the good, there's always bad. But the bad part is that you always get a lot of fakers. You got a lot of guys that say they're fighters. Like, how many times I've heard, this guy's a, you ever heard of this guy? He's a UFC fighter. I've heard so many times. I can't, pretty much every day. One guy I'll tell us, I'm with my buddy or something, and he'll be like, this is Ryan, he's a professional fighter. And then he's like, and then their buddy would be like, oh yeah, you know, this guy, he's a UFC fighter, fight UFC. Like, nope, never heard of him. Yeah. You know, it's hilarious. Everybody, that's the only thing that's happened that I can say is bad, is that everybody's a UFC fighter nowadays.
Well, with the progression you mentioned, you fought over in Japan several times earlier in your career, and fights for smaller fighters, big title fights, and big exposure in Japan for smaller fighters. You know, someone like Rumen Asato is probably the one name that strikes out immediately. A guy who's basically a superstar in Japan, and usually now fights at 145. Are we going to see that happen in North America? Are we going to you're starting to see organizations, the WC is promoting a 145 division, your iFaber is, becoming a fairly well-known commodity. Do you think this growth in MMA, Ryan, is going to lead to more big opportunities for smaller fighters like yourself?
I hope so. That's the one thing that keeps me going, keeps me training every day, is that one day these guys are going to understand that the lightweight division is the division where it's the most exciting. You don't see in a heavyweight division guys start flying knees, flying triangle chokes, flying arm bars, you know. And not only that, a lot of times you watch the heavyweights pretty slow, throw a punch here and there. You always get a lot of, even in the last UFC, I was watching that again, you get a lot of boos because a lot of these heavyweights are just moving, dancing around, trying to catch their breath. Mm-hmm. People don't understand that the lightweights go, 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 go.
Yeah.
So I hope that God, especially the 145 pound, the 135 pound division starts getting exposure and recognition. My dream is for the UFC to start the 145 pound division, and I don't know what they're waiting
on.
Yeah. I seriously don't, because I think you've asked me this before in one of the previous interviews or before about the 145 pound division. How is there enough talent there? There's more than enough talent there.
Mm-hmm.
And you think about it, the one organization that actually been doing it for the longest time has been TKO, and they've had tons of exciting fights at 145.
Yeah, that's a good point. Well, I think, there was a story, I did a story on this for the Full Contact Fighter paper last month, and I got some quotes from you and Jeff Kern and Mark Hominick. And I think that just because now there's so many shows going on, there's so much exposure, the UFC is doing more events every year, that there's probably an opportunity to have a 145 division. But as well now at the WEC, I think you're starting to see it. Someone like Uriah Faber, as I already mentioned, he holds several titles. And I think that people, more MMA fans are starting to become more cognizant of the fact that there are some great 145-pound fighters out there.
There's some great ones. One of the best fight, the most popular fight, one of the most popular fighters in Japan is 145, Ken Yamamoto.
Yeah.
He fights at 155 because, you know what, it's the most of the fights out from. Mm-hmm. But he is an actual 145er.
Yeah. Well, Ryan, we appreciate you coming on the show. I know you're taking a quick break out of your training to come on the show for us, so we appreciate that. Of course, you're going to be fighting Manny Tapia March 10th in Vegas. Best of luck, Ryan, going for the 135 flyweight title.
Thank you.
The world's only mixed martial arts league, the International Fight League, brings you explosive fighting action with championship-caliber athletes in its world premiere season. Don't miss the excitement of the International Fight League in its 2007 inaugural season.
Friday, February 23rd at the Arena at Gwinnett Center.
Find out which team will reign supreme when Carlos Newton's Dragons battle Matt Lindland's Wolfpack.
And Igor Zinoviev's Red Bears face off against Enzo Gracie's Pitbull.
Get your tickets at the Gwinnett Center box office at Ticketmaster.com or by calling Ticketmaster at 404-249-6400. As the first mixed martial arts league of its kind, the IFL is primed to change the face of the sport forever. Be a part of it all.
Friday, February 23rd, 7:30 p.m. at the Arena at Gwinnett Center.
Get your tickets now at the Gwinnett Center box office, Ticketmaster.com, or call Ticketmaster at
404-249-6400.
The International Fight League. Your sport starts at the beginning.
Have you subscribed to Full Contact Fighter? FCF is the undefeated, no-holds-barred news source of the world, and no avid MMA fan should ever miss an issue. For years now, FCF has been providing MMA enthusiasts in-depth coverage of the world's greatest sport. Each issue contains event reports and photos from across the globe, including coverage from Japan, Brazil, Britain, Canada, and the United States. From fighter bios, technical advice, to training tips, FCF is the only publication that brings you all the MMA coverage you need every month, 12 times a year. Check out www.fcfighter.com for subscription information or call 516-676-0033. Full Contact Fighter, the undefeated, no-holds-barred news source of the world. Welcome back to Full Contact Fighter Radio as we wrap up another show. Like I mentioned at the top of the show, just a couple days away from Pride. Brendan, are you getting excited?
Yeah, I'm anxious. I'm worried that I'm excited, actually. I'm really excited for the show. But anytime I ever get excited for MMA, I'm always grossly disappointed. So I've sort of lost my dispassionate perspective, and that can only lead to badness. So hopefully it doesn't work out that way.
Yeah, and we'll get into that a little bit. The show earlier this week, we heard Steve Morocco's thoughts on it and Jeff Lombard-Mazaros, and now it's a kind of our turn. So we'll talk about that. First off, though, I wanted to ask you if you saw TKO 28, the replay, pay-per-view replay.
I did see it. This is a good show. You know, TKO is such a great... If people have never watched... I don't know, probably a lot of American fans have never watched TKO or never had the opportunity, but if you actually do get the opportunity, it's a really entertaining promotion. You know, they really have... They draw a lot of their fighters from Quebec and Ontario, and usually more kickboxing backgrounds, although there's obviously some fantastic grapplers in the promotion, but really very entertaining fights. I was really impressed with the card, and I don't think we can miss the next one, Kelsey. I think we're going to have to, you always fail to book the FCF helicopter in advance, and then, you know, they're flying around doing other things with it. So next time it happens, we got to go.
Yeah, and the thing that blew me away right away was it was almost like you felt like you were watching a UFC in a sense. It was in a hockey arena with a Bell Center where the Montreal Canadiens play. There was about 8,000 people in attendance. They go with the Octagon now, and just a really polished event. The only criticism I might have had is there was no replays. I'm not sure why that was, but other than that, the production value of the show was fantastic. You're right, it was great. It was a great event. What was your thoughts on the main event? There was some controversy, an appeal launched by Team Tompkins in regards to Hatsu Hioki's majority decision victory over Mark Hominick. Brendan, what did you think? What did you have that fight scored?
You know, I only watched it once, so I have to have, you know, I have to make that caveat that I only watched it once, and I kind of watched it. I of course hate watching fights after I know what happened, and I noticed I did know that Hominick. That the word was that it was a controversial decision, but really I thought Hioki clearly won the first two rounds. Hominick clearly won the last two, so I don't know how controversial a decision can be if it's a split over one round, you know. Was it controversial? No. Was it a bad decision? Yeah, I wouldn't even go as far as to say that. I thought it was unfortunate. You know, maybe I'm sure a lot of people thought that Hominick won. But I don't know. In my mind, you know, if you go to a decision, if you let it go to a decision, then that's what you get. So it's tough nails, right?
Yeah. Well, and I mentioned Ryan in the interview with Ryan Diaz. I thought I probably agreed with Mark Colangelo's scoring. Colangelo, he's one of the commentators for TKO. He gave Hioki a 3-2 just far as rounds one. And I could probably live with that, you know. And again, it is a good point. What you're saying is that I have to watch the fight one more time. I only watched it once as well, but I was really impressed with Hioki, man. And this guy, and then we talked about it in the interview with Diaz a little bit. But the guy is so tall, and you know, he's so lanky. And the fact is that he's worked on his stand up so much, and he's also got the great ground game. I mean, this guy. Really, when Hominick said on the show that Hioki is easily top five, top three in the world, I think a lot of people would agree with that assessment that have seen him fight.
Oh, there's no doubt, and Japanese fighters, in especially in Pride, they almost seem to be an absence of them for a long time, but just the nature of the people, the sweet spot for fighters is like between 135 and 155. And if you've got your majority of your population that's going to weigh in there, that's where your talent pool is going to be. And that's so evident in the lightweight Japanese fighters, you know. In my opinion, there's probably, you know, seven of the top ten in 45 and 55 are Japanese fighters. And that's where they really shine. So it's really not surprising to me that he has such fantastic skills.
Last thing I wanted to touch on before we move on to Pride was Samsel Fabio Holanda, and I do want to give Samsel full credit for hanging in there, and you know, Samsel won because Fabio Holanda couldn't continue after the second round, And Sam clearly has worked on his ground game a lot. I mean, he submitted J.S. Estrada, and he looked great as far as lasting with Fabio Holanda, who's Brazilian Top Team Canada's head jiu-jitsu instructor. But, man, you know, Fabio Holanda, like, the guy was gassed, and he couldn't continue. If this guy could get his conditioning in order, Brendan, I mean, his record is so deceiving. I think he's 4-5 now. But if he can get his conditioning in order, this guy could he's just amazing on the ground, and his takedowns are great as well.
Yeah, and he really he had Sam Stout in trouble a couple times in the first two rounds, and his takedowns actually worked great for a BJJ guy. They were actually really sharp, and he really worked the cage well. It was one of these things where it's just something you don't see in professional fighting anymore in MMA. And when's the last time you saw on a big card someone being unable to answer the bell? So I can't think to rag on his conditioning, and I was actually going to ask you about that, whether or not there was any follow-up, or whether or not he had some kind of underlying injury, because it wasn't that he was just gassed, but he was literally, you know, after they threw in the towel, he fell to the ground. So I got to think that there was something else, but there was no obvious injury that stood out. You know, it's just something that's, if it's true that he was just gassed, that's just remarkable, like unheard of.
Well, I believe, and whether or not this is a legitimate posting, but I believe on the underground Canadian forum that he posted sort of an apology to fans of sorts that he should have trained more and that he thought he was ready for the fight, etc. I mean, but he's had troubles cutting weight his whole career, Brendan. You know, once he made the move to 155, this has happened before. So I'm not sure if maybe he had some difficulties cutting weight again, and just this was a resulting factor that he was just too tired. You know, we should have him on the show. We've had him on the show before, so maybe we should try to get him on the show and ask him ourselves.
Mm. Yeah, it's a little Frank Trigg. I was listening to an interview with him today, and he was ragging on the guys who were interviewing him. He's like, "No, I won a couple fights. People want to talk to me. No one wants to talk to you when you lose." So maybe we should have like two shows a week: a winner show and a loser show.
Yeah, perhaps.
Because it's so true, right? You know, you hear all these big names, and you know. Who's talked to Munson, for instance, after his fight with Sylvia? I mean, you know, never heard of the guy. He disappeared off the face of the earth, which is unfortunate, right? And,
mm-hmm.
But it's, you know, unfortunately true.
Yeah, well, unless there's some controversy and the fighter wants to sort of, yeah, get his thoughts out about the fight, yeah, I agree with you. Let's get into Pride. We don't have, you know, this is going to take a little bit of time, I think, break it down, and it is a great card, and I talked to Stephen Morocco and Jeff Mazaros a little bit about this, the fact that it seems that despite the fact it's such a solid card, it's got some of Pride's best fighters on the card, it seems like it's somewhat lost in the shuffle, but maybe that's just a perception I get from up here in Canada. It'll be interesting to see what kind of buy rates maybe they get for pay-per-view. But, Brendan, I mean, it just seems like even in the last week or couple weeks, there's been some great additions to the card, and now Sergei Kharitonov is going to be competing.
Yeah, I think the card is... again, totally stacked, and Nakamura has dropped out, but I don't think that affects the card whatsoever. You know, that's not about that anyone's pay-per-view buy is going to hinge on. Yeah, the card is absolutely stacked, and every there's not one fight. What's typical of Pride cards, you know, is they'll have a great fighter like, you know, Shogun or you know, Fedor, and then they'll be fighting some Can, and you're kind of interested in seeing that, but you're not really interested in the fight. But this is completely different, I think, because all of these fights are going to be competitive fights, and it's just really great talent and great matchmaking. So I think they really made an effort to pull out all the stops.
Yeah, well, let's get into it. Some of these fights, you know, will involve some fighters that I haven't seen compete, so it might be hard to make some predictions on some of them. But first one, Joachim Hansen versus Jason Ireland, a great lightweight fight. What are your thoughts, Brendan? Who are you picking?
I got to give Hansen the edge here, and I guess the question is how where's his head going to be at, because he really did he fight even once in two, I think maybe once in 2006, and he had some kind of contract problem, and then of course he comes back and runs into Aoki and his crazy tights, and loses in fantastic fashion in a Gogo Plata. And to the Gogo or Homo Plata?
It was Gogo, yeah.
Yeah, but, you know, that's got to that's got to affect the ego, because it's not something you traditionally see, a technique you traditionally see. That's nothing, taking nothing away from Hansen, but it'll be interesting to see how he bounces back from that and whether or not, you know, he's good to go mentally. And I have no reason to think that he won't be. So he's another guy, you know, you just can't, I can't think of a fight that I've ever seen him in that I haven't enjoyed thoroughly. So, you know, he's a guy you gotta have on the card, because anytime he's in the ring, there's a, you know, more than 50% chance there's gonna be either a highlight knockout or, you know, absolutely bizarre submission.
Yeah, well, I haven't seen Jason Ireland fight that much, maybe once or twice, and I just think that I'd have to go with Joachim Hansen on this. I think Jason is a tough veteran fighter and could give him some trouble, but I just think, considering Joachim Hansen, the level of competition he's been up against, and I think he'll be looking to get back on the winning track with some ferocity, so I'm going to go with Joachim Hansen in this one. You didn't even make a pick, dude.
I didn't?
No.
I'm gonna go with Hansen, but you know something? It's 155 is still that sort of magical place where you can pull guys out of a hat, and you know, we just talked about in an interview tonight. Who had heard of Mike Brown before the Bodog show? And you know, look back at his record. I've seen him fight once before, you know, in his Genki loss. But you know, looking back on his record, he's only lost to really high caliber fighters, and you never heard of him because he's a 155er, and you're never on TV, and you know, we don't attend these small shows in the States and the more obscure ones in Japan. So I think Jason Ireland could be one of these guys who he's sort of either a blackout guy or no one's really familiar with him, but a really experienced journeyman, and could come in and surprise everyone. So I'm going to go with Hansen, but I don't think any of these guys you can say are cans that are meant to prop up any one particular fighter.
Yeah, and I think some of the sentiments you just shared, you probably will want to echo them for predicting Hayato Sakurai versus Mac Danzig. Mac Danzig, of course, longtime King of the Cage, lightweight champion, making his MMA Pride debut against Hayato Sakurai, which a lot of people, most rankings have him top three lightweight fighters in the world. Brendan, who do you see winning this fight?
Well, I have to go with Sakurai just because he's so well rounded, and I do like Danzig, but I don't think the level of competition that Danzig has faced in King of the Cage, and you know, he's roped into a very long term contract with them, and they thankfully let him out to fight in Pride, but I don't think the level of competition he's faced is even remotely comparable to Sakurai, who's literally fought the who's who for anywhere from 155 to 170 in MMA. So he's got a wealth of experience and basically right on the verge of being number one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I think this fight might actually come down to wrestling. I think if Matt can take the fight to the ground, and he could, in theory, I think, win it from that position, from the top position over Sakurai. Not that Sakurai doesn't have a great ground game, but Mac Danzig does as well. And I think Mac could win it via that route. But in saying that, if I was to bet, I would go with Sakurai as well. And I agree with a lot of what you had to say. Antonio Rogério Nogueira versus Sukuju. I believe his first name is Thierry Sukuju. I'm butchering his name, unfortunately. We talked a little bit about him. He's a very well-accomplished judo practitioner, Pan Am, silver medalist, I believe, if I recall correctly. Brendan, who are you picking in that fight?
Well, it's tough to pick against any of the Nogs, right?
Yeah.
But this is a fight that I'm interested in seeing, because this guy's been training, Sukuju's been training with Team Quest, and I think I may have seen an excellent picture of him kicking Mayhem Miller in the nuts on the internet somewhere, which made me greatly amused, and I kind of wondered who that guy was. And now we'll find out. On paper, he looks like one of these guys who's really sharp, and I know a lot of the Team Quest guys just are singing his praises and saying that this may be a fight where many eyebrows are raised, seeing how well he does against Little Nog. And I think this is an important fight, especially for Little Nog, because the next fight, you've got to think, is a title shot against Vanderlei.
Or Dan Henderson. Yeah.
Or Dan Henderson, yeah.
Yeah, I'm going to go with Nogueira again on this, but I haven't seen Sokoju fight, so I kind of don't like making predictions on fighters that I haven't seen fight, of course. But I think from evaluating the paperwork and looking at this fight straight up, yeah, I'd be hard pressed to pick against Nogueira as well. Sergey Kharitonov versus Mike Russo. Russo kind of a little bit of an unknown commodity. He's only got a couple fights under his belt. So I guess same predicament here as far as in trying to make a prediction, just like last one with Nogueira.
Easy for you to say, Kelsey.
Yeah. But I think I'd probably just go with Kharitonov. Obviously, he's one of the more highly regarded fighters in the world.
Yeah, Kharitonov is another one of these guys that actually has kind of fallen, I don't want to say fallen on hard times, but he's underperformed, and it'll be interesting to see how he gets his head back in this in the game as well. But you know, you got to go against him. He's got a lot of natural ability, and you know, people were talking about him not even a year ago as being the only legitimate remaining threat to Fedor's crown. Now, a lot of that hype has died down, obviously, but you know, the guy is a young guy and he's got excellent skills, and it will be very interesting to see. I think the next step he has to take is to get out of those ridiculous 1990s tights that he wears and into a pair of shorts, and I think that'll push him over the top.
Well, and one of the guys that beat him, I think he's lost his last two fights in a row, Alexander Emelianenko and Alistair Overeem. And Alistair Overeem's going to be fighting Shogun Rua. Your thoughts on this fight? The first fight was very competitive, and like Mazzaro said last week, or earlier this week on the show, I mean, Alistair did have Shogun in a lot of trouble. Who you pick in their first encounter until it looked like maybe he got tired? Who are you picking in this fight?
Yeah, Overeem. I'm really upset with Overeem because, you know, I hated Overeem at first. I just didn't like the style of fighting. And then he really won me over. He got some excellent, tough, gutty wins. And then I was a big Overeem fan. And as soon as I become an Overeem fan, the guy hits the skids. So, I don't know. I was really excited with his move to heavyweight because I thought that was the ticket for him. I didn't think he could fight at 205, and now he's back at 205. So I don't know. I think if you recall back to the tournament, you know, he did give Shogun a world of hurt, and he was really ripping his way through the tournament. And if it wasn't Shogun, it could have been Overeem that captured all the accolades coming out of that tournament, because he really worked his way very well far into the tournament. But you know, is it the did he gas because you know did he gas because he just shouldn't be fighting at 205, or did he gas because Shogun forced him to gas? So I think that's the big that will be the big question. But I know that this fight I can't imagine this being a bad fight. So I will be very interested to see it. It's probably the most exciting fight of the night potentially for me.
Well, so now who are you picking?
That's a toughie. I'm going to go, you know something? This is my pick. I'm going to pick Overeem with a huge upset, and if Overeem doesn't win, I'll never pick him again, and I'll curse his name for the rest of time.
Right. Well, I think that it's not, I don't think it would be too big of an upset, to be honest. I think certainly as far as a lot of fans, etc. Shogun is quite popular, and not that Alistair isn't as well, but Shogun, I mean, there's been a lot build on him and as the next big star for Pride, and of course his 2005 campaign will not be soon forgotten, an amazing year defeating Arona. But I didn't really like how he looked against Nakamura in his last fight. I think that if he fights that way against Alistair Overeem, he could very easily lose. But I'll go with Shogun again. It seems like for most of his fights, he always manages to pull it out. So I'm going to go with Shogun.
You don't think that would be a big upset?
Well, I think it would be a big upset in the sense that, you know, I think there would be a lot of people surprised. But I guess what I'm trying to say in somewhat of a snobby way is that I think for people that follow Pride a lot and have followed these guys' careers a lot, no, you know, I don't think it'd be a huge upset for people that are informed about, you know, their last fight and etc. I don't think it shouldn't be considered a massive upset.
But. Yeah, I think a lot of people, and by a lot, I think I mean most people, consider Shogun to be probably number two in the world. And it's kind of like the elephant in the room that no one wants to speak of, because Vanderlei has a title. You know, no one wants to ever place Shogun ahead of him. in any of the rankings. But I think secretly a lot of people do believe that he's better than Vanderlei.
Oh yeah, yeah.
I just worry.
And you know, this fight I think is going to be really entertaining as well. And I think I agree with a lot of the assessments that both Morocco and Wombat had earlier in the week. And I think if Trigg. And I think Trigg has admitted this in most of his interviews, that he's looking to get Misaki on his back and pound it out.
Yeah, I think what we see of Trigg, you know, everything that was good about Trigg from before the Matt Hughes fights is back, and everything that was bad about him is sort of gone. And I think, and I'm talking fighting-wise, not personality-wise, because all the badness is still there, of course. But I think what you see from Trigg now is that he's always been a fighter of vast, untapped potential, and he has always been a no-show in the ring, and he's always been a notorious head case. And I think now that a lot of that pressure is off him, mm-hmm. No one really expects him to win anything. Everyone thought he was going to lose against Miller. He's kind of fighting because he kind of wanted to fight again, but he doesn't have to fight. So I think a lot with that pressure taken off his shoulders, that potential is really untapped now. And so I wouldn't be surprised if he did win the fight. You know, he's got a lot of bravado. He is claiming that he's got to come in and be the bully in the fight. So it'll be very interesting. I think he's got the potential to do it. And maybe, you know, the new Trigg at 185 will be a force to be reckoned with.
Who are you picking?
I'm going to go with Trigg in an upset.
Yeah. I think
don't take anything away from me by saying that my picks aren't upsets, all right? I find that insulting.
Well, I'm going to go with Misaki then, just so that, I guess we've already disagreed on one fight. But, yeah, I think that, you know, Frank has a great chance to win this fight. I think it'll be very competitive. And if he wins, all of a sudden he's back in considering, you know, in title contention. And that would be great for his career. And it's almost as if, though, I find from some of the comments that I've read that it almost seems like a lot of people are expecting him to win. And I don't know if he'll be the favorite as far as the betting in Vegas, but it seems like there's kind of this air that people are sort of expecting him to win, and I can understand that. But I think I'm going to go with Misaki. I think it's, as much as I'm tempted to go with Trigg, there's part of me, too, that doesn't want to count out Misaki. I've counted him a couple times, and I think I'm going to go with Misaki.
If you don't think Misaki is a favorite, you know, you just don't know anything about MMA. I think that's, it would be crazy to pick against him. But that being said, I think there are huge problems that Trigg has to overcome in this fight. Number one, he's not going to knock Misaki out. This is not going to happen. Number two, if he controls Misaki from the top, he can't use elbows in Pride, right? So is he going to cut him on the ground? No. And is Misaki a warrior? Yes. You know, is he going to roll over and quit in the fight? No. So, you know, Triggs, if he's going to win this fight, I see him basically riding Misaki for the entire time and winning a decision. And I think that's going to be tough. So I think Trigg is in for it. I don't think he can knock him out on his feet. I can't see that happening. And I think Trigg's going to be in for a long night, but I'm still going to pick him.
Takanori Gomi versus Nick Diaz. We're getting short on time here. This is going to be an unbelievable fight. Everyone is giving Nick Diaz an excellent chance to win this fight, and I think they should. Who are you picking in this fight?
Yeah, I love watching Nick Diaz fight, and I think that if there's any, the most likely upset is going to be this one. That's my pick for the most likely upset, and I'm going to go with Diaz to pull it an upset. I think. And, you know, I begged on my hands and knees to Kelsey to get Diaz on the phone because we've never interviewed
him. I've tried,
and
man.
His interviews are hilarious.
Yeah.
So, he's a real character. I think he's got a lot of piss. He always seems to be angry about something. I don't know how he can get angry about a person who doesn't actually speak English, certainly not from any smack talking, but I imagine he's picked some little aspect of Gomi's character to obsess over and get himself pumped up for the fight. And I see this, you know, I see Diaz being able, having the tools to win this fight. But that being said, you know, he always seems to come up short against guys that are stronger and out-wrestle him. And Gomi has all the tools, I think, to do that. So again, I'm going to go, this is my crazy upset pick night, but I'm going to pick Diaz in yet another crazy upset.
Yeah, this one is really, really hard to pick, and the way you just broke it down is exactly my feelings about it as well. Gomi, of course, is known for having really good wrestling. He's strong, lots of power in his hands, and I don't see him knocking out Diaz. I think that he would have to beat him, either winning a sort of like Joe Riggs did, you know, out-muscling him a little bit, landing the more power shots over the entire duration of the fight and winning, getting a decision. But, you know, I think this one's hard to pick, but I think I'll go with Diaz as well. There's just something, I think Gomi, you know, he lost to Aurelio. I think there's some, he was exposed a little bit in that fight, to his credit, against Ishida, and the rematch Aurelio, he looks like he's back, but I'm going to go with Diaz as well. I've counted out Diaz a couple times too, and I think I'm trying to, that's my 2007, you know, I'm trying to not count people out anymore, dude.
Well, I'll put it this way, I think Diaz is a better fighter than Aurelio, all, you know, all respect to Marcus Aurelius, but I think Diaz is a better fighter than he is, so, you know, the possibility is there.
And, of course, the big main event, Dan Henderson versus Wanderlei Silva for the Pride Fighting Middleweight Championship, 205 Championship.
So it is for the champ. It's tough to figure. So this is like the third Saturday in February in the year of the pig, dragon, or dog. So it actually is, the belt is actually on the line. Is that the Pride rule?
Yeah. So Henderson could be the first two-time, or, you know, the first holder of two different titles. So really, this fight too, I'm really excited to see it. We're really, really short on time, so I'll just go out and say it. I'm going to go with Henderson on this. I think that he'll be able to get Wanderlei down. I think he might stand with him for a bit, but I think he'll probably, especially if you look at it, he looked great against Vitor Belfort, Dan did, and I think that he's going to, I don't think he'll stop Wanderlei, but I think he'll get a kind of a Rona-type victory that Rona got over Wanderlei, their first fight.
I am going to, in this fight, I'm going to pick Wanderlei, just because Henderson was supposed to do our show, and he's not turned up a couple times.
Oh, yeah, that's always a good reason. A lot of logic in that prediction.
No, I think Wanderlei's got, this is a huge gamble, I think, for Wanderlei, and I'm actually surprised he took this fight. I'm actually really surprised he took the fight, and I don't think Wanderlei has anything to win in this fight. I think he's got everything to lose, and if he loses this fight, that would have serious implications, I think, for him. So I can't see it happening. If he could get up for any fight, he's got to get up for this fight. So, and Henderson's got nothing to lose, so I think if Henderson shows well, then that's more credit to him. But I think Wanderlei has got to realize that. I think he has to have come to the realization at some point that this is a really important fight for him to win.
On that note, Brendan, we got to get out of here. You enjoy your weekend, and you enjoy the fights.
I will enjoy the fights. I hope I enjoy the fights.
Yes,
that's
exactly.
That's my big anticipation. And I think Pride, Pride's got to, it's now or never for them, right? And even if people don't tune into the pay-per-view, I think there's got to be some positive buzz coming out of this, and I think this is probably the card to do that.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what happens, and we'll talk to you next week, and I'm sure there'll be plenty to discuss in regards to this card.
All right.
Okay, buddy, take care.
See ya.